Couple things as we get ready. Last week, we had and I didn't call it homework, but we just had a challenge to do our time, for us to do some things together with God by way of prayer, listening to the Holy Spirit, really making that intentional as a part of our lives. And I'm wondering how that went. If there's any updates, how did it go?
Well, I've been teasing with Christina and Brandon all week about finding everything wrong with everybody.
He's a great accountability. He is.
So that was just joking around. So the first day I got convicted, I'm still working on that, and John fortunately said, "Well, Wayne, lucky for you, you're not in charge of fixing yourself. That's God's department." So that gives me a little First day, it's terrible.
Well, good. Glad to hear that. Glad to hear that it was terrible. Did anybody else have a terrible experience?
Just the convicting part.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Who wants to be convicted of doing something wrong? I hope everybody got a little bit of conviction over the week, but I did find everything wrong with everybody. I wasn't looking at myself. I thought I could straighten out the church. That's really my call.
Yes, that's your call.
You've got a ton of work ahead of you. You've got to straighten this group up. You got a ton of work ahead of you.
I didn't feel convicted in like a guilty way. I felt convicted in like a... Like the whole idea of like the renewing of your mind. And so with me having all these anxiety issues, this was a really good reminder for me of God as the source of the renewing of the mind and the source to go to for the peace that you look for that the world cannot offer.
So I did a... Lee knows about this, but I did a Bible study on those first few verses of Romans 12 in Costa Rica one time, and I spent a lot of time beforehand and talked to Lee about it too. Is how far does that go? I mean, is it when you say offer yourselves a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God? This is your spiritual act of worship. Does that mean the moment you awaken in the morning, you start with appreciating what God has done, giving you a good night's sleep, awakened you, giving you the ability to brush your teeth? I mean, how far does that go? It's actually every detail of your life, and it's hard to remember at every detail of your life that, God's presented you with another opportunity, especially when the opportunity is not a pleasant one. At work, and when you find yourself in the middle of a challenge, so it's not always easy to provide a worshipful spirit during that particular challenge. But that's what we're asked to do. And Lee suggested that I read a book by, what was his name?
Tilden Edwards.
Yeah, the mystic guy.
Yeah, Living Simply Through the Day.
Yeah, so he suggests I read this book, and that book gets very detailed about every function that your body goes through should be something you should be thankful for.
Every function.
I totally get that.
Every function, yeah.
When you sit with people all day who sometimes can't have a normal bodily function, you get thankful that you're done.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was really kind of a... But it put an exclamation point on having a worshipful attitude every day, through every moment of every day, and it's not an easy thing to do, but it's something that continues to haunt me ever since I did the study. And there were people in Costa Rica when I was doing the Bible study that were overwhelmed by the thought of, how can I be thankful for every moment of every day? How can I be worshipful in every moment of every day? And what does it mean to really offer my body as a living So, yeah, it's still haunts me to this day. So when he brought it up last week, I thought, oh, my goodness, the haunting continues.
John.
Haunting implies a relationship, though. And that's, I've been convicted over and over of the relationship aspect of the walk with Christ as being a two-way thing and something we're to be continually conscious of. It's not a religion where we can just go through the motions and do this and do that and then go on with our lives. It's a relationship, a daily walk with Christ. So I am the way and the truth and the life. And can't get too much of that.
Anybody else? If you have any extras back there, John, circle them back over to Wayne because I think we need a few more on this side. So I saw, and this will kind of wrap up this, but I was absolutely fascinated to see Stephen Colbert and Anderson Cooper in an interview. And in this interview, Stephen Colbert, who... My understanding, and I can't attest to anything other than what I saw in this interview, but Stephen Colbert is a Catholic Christian. And in this, he's talking about being grateful for life. And Anderson Cooper, they've been doing this interview, and he talks about gratitude to God. Not Anderson, Stephen Colbert talks about gratitude to God. And there comes this moment when Anderson Cooper asks him about being grateful even when life, it's rough, it treats you bad, when it's not nice, whatever. And as he's asking this question, asking if God is even giving us a gift in the middle of difficult or trials, and Anderson Cooper starts choking up during this question. And he gets emotional. And if you know anything about Anderson Cooper's story, you can kind of understand a little bit of the trials he's been through. But Stephen Colbert responds with this. He does it slowly. He doesn't just do it dismissively. But he says, I believe that even in the trials, my life is blessed. Even in the most difficult situations, my life is blessed. God hasn't left me. Those trials are there, he says, because they ultimately help me rely on God. So even in the trials, I'm thankful for everything that God gives me. And Anderson Cooper was just blown away by this answer. He didn't have a faith to process someone who would say, even in the most difficult situations, I give thanks to God, even for the difficulties. And I found it interesting in reflecting on what we talked about last week. It is sometimes, Wayne, to your point, difficult when we give ourselves over to God and when we try to become a daily sacrifice. When everything we do, we try to reframe into, am I doing this to give glory to and to offer myself to God? This week, we're going to move on, but I still have a thing for us to spend time with God. And this will be a theme for a while. Because I want us to exercise these muscles of intentionally focusing through the week on where God wants us to grow and how we can grow. So I have a question for you. How do you handle stress? How do you handle stress? John chapter 16, verse 33. Jesus has just finished up this long teaching section with the disciples where he's trying to help them understand what life is going to be like at his departure. After his crucifixion, he knows that the disciples are going to be troubled. And he's been there and kind of taken on his shoulders the trouble to this point. It's Jesus who's about to be crucified, not the rest of the disciples. They have no clue that they too will suffer an end to their lives, many of them, because of their faith in Christ and because of them acting out on their faith in Christ. But up until this point, Jesus has been the lightning rod. They've just been watching it. And Jesus tells them, you're in for some trials. This is not easy stuff following me. In essence, life is going to get stressful for you. And then he concludes this teaching segment in chapter 16 in verse 33. I've told you all these things so that you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. In this world, you will have trouble. There will be stresses and trials in your life. Your spouse and closest friend will suffer. You will suffer and cause her stress. You will have those moments when you walk to the mailbox and you have no clue what you're about to open. What's the next letter? What's the next news? You will have children who will go through trials and it will stress you. Your parents will be stressed. It's a fact of life. We will have trials. It will be difficult. Take this simple quiz. Right now you have 10 hands or 10 fingers, and we'll start with fingers. If anybody needs to, they can take off their shoes. Take this simple quiz and just start counting up the number of factors you have that would indicate you have an escalated and elevated level of stress in your life. Are you tired, tense, can't sleep, or you sleep too much? You can't eat, or you eat too much? Colds, headache, muscle aches, you grit your teeth. You worry a lot. You have mood swings, bad dreams. You get discouraged. You have little joy. You often cry. You're temperamental. You don't talk, or you talk too much to people. You feel empty, negative, angry, angry at yourself or angry at others. Feelings of apathy, unforgiveness, doubtful, cynical. You feel like life doesn't have meaning. Do you have few friends? Do you stay at home a lot? Do you feel isolated, angry with others, lonely? Do you feel cold towards others or feel clammed up? Do you easily forget things? Is it trouble concentrating? Does your mind wander at work? Or does your mind never stop thinking about all the other things going on? Are you easily confused? Are you negative in your thoughts? Are you bored? Is work piling up? Do you have too much work to finish? Do you miss days of work? Do you feel pressure at work? Are you disinterested at work? Do you procrastinate your work and end up overloading yourself? There's really not a one, you know, if you have, I don't even know how many are in the list. Do you have this or this many? The point is how many of us could at least hold our fingers up with one or two of those? If not, 10 or 12 of those.
I had to go onto my toes.
You went on, she did take off her shoes. I saw the shoes come off. We ran out of fingers and toes. I needed somebody else. I needed my neighbor's fingers and toes. Our bodies process this kind of stress by really dumping adrenaline into our bodies. We end up dealing with our fight, flight, or freeze responses, and it increases the stress in our bodies, and we have physical reactions to this kind of stress. When you get stressed, I don't know how you react. When you get stressed, something happens in your body. For me, stress causes me to sweat. Stress causes my heart rate to go up. I know my blood pressure goes up. Stress causes me to get a little flushed in my face. It causes my mind to race. I'm constantly thinking. When I get stressed, I know physically what happens in my body. This is the nature of what PTSD is. Post-traumatic stress disorder happens, and we first identified this when men and women were coming back from a theater of war. Because they're in an environment where they are constantly hyper-alert, hyper-vigilant, and aware that at any moment, even when they are sitting behind the lines and they are in a place that they deem as safe, at any moment, the suicide bomber can drive through the gate. Or a rocket can be launched at them from a great distance. Anything can happen. And what they ended up finding was that it wasn't even just the enemy. Sometimes it's that one of their peers can snap. And so they constantly live at this level of alert. And then they come back to the suburbs of Johnson County. And what do we deal with? Traffic. Getting to work on time. Too much news on the show. Too loud a TV next door in the apartment. Whatever it is. And when they are living at a 9.5 all the time, then they have such a thin margin for coping with those kinds of stresses. And what happens is they react in the same way they would have reacted when their training was appropriate. That's post-traumatic stress disorder. It is, and my understanding from the research is everybody who comes back from a theater of war has it. The difference is their capacity to cope with it. It's the coping skills that go along with it. But everybody has it. And they have to learn how to adjust. You and I can experience similar things, not because we've been to a theater of war. But the same body reactions can push our chemicals to the point when we are at a job that we feel like at any moment the boss could come in and say you're fired because our next door neighbor got fired, because the person down the hall got fired. You and I can live in that environment where we fear every day that we go into the work that we could truly be fired. That escalates our stress at work and we become hypervigilant. And it doesn't matter if that's not even a possibility. We still live with that in our minds. This is what happens when a spouse is abused. They never know, or a child, they never know when the next angry outburst will come that will put them at physical risk. And so they live hypervigilant. And they end up with their body out of whack because they're constantly dealing with that adrenaline. Even sometimes when we just have and we get worried about what's going on in our own families, it can cause that kind of stress and that physical reaction in our bodies. I will not minimize what that stress can do to us. Esther came home this last week, this weekend, and she came in the door, and Terry and I were just sitting there watching TV. We knew she was on her way home. We were just sitting there. We'd eaten dinner, and we were just watching a movie. And Esther comes in, and before she could say anything, she just, you could see when she started talking, she was physically shaking and in tears. And she had just come from the highway. And she was stopped. If you know, I-35 has construction out near Moonlight Road, and they've narrowed it to one lane. And she was in the one lane, and all of a sudden, she was stopped. All the traffic in front of her was stopped, and you know what's happening. Behind her, somebody else, for whatever reason, wasn't paying attention to the stop traffic. And she hears screeching, and she looks up, and a semi-truck is barreling towards her. And at the very last second, they bail off into the grass, but it was close enough that Esther's car rocked from the wind. And this was what, that stress level for her carried on for hours. And the stress level will come back the next time she gets on the highway, and she comes to a moment when she sees traffic stopped in front of her. What's her first thought going to be? Stress, because she's looking behind her in the rearview mirror wondering who's going to potentially hit her. We deal with these kinds of things in our normal lives. And now again, hear the words of Jesus. I've told you these things so that you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. I'm not going to simply tell you, don't be stressed. Sometimes our stress hits a point when we need to talk to somebody professionally about it. Our stress can hit a point when our physical reactions have put our chemicals in our body out of whack. And we need physical, perhaps emotional support. We could even need some sort of pharmaceutical support. That can happen.
I had to do that this morning.
There it is. But there's something else that we also have to realize is that along this long continuum, we always have an opportunity to understand that God is in charge. That God is present, even in the midst of us fearing being rear-ended on the highway, in the midst of us being fired, in the midst of a theater in war. God is still present. First of all, we can manage our own stress by slowing our body down. One of the tools I use is just when I'm stressed at work and I've been focusing on the computer and dealing with way too many to-dos on the to-do list, is I will stop and take a break and walk around. Sometimes it's just getting up and walking around in my office and opening the blinds and looking out and closing the blinds and going back to the work. Sometimes I literally will get out and walk around my parking lot. I have a 1 and a 2 mile loop from my office. 1 mile takes me down the neighborhood and back. 2 miles takes me a lot further down the neighborhood and back. But I know where those loops are and I know exactly how long it takes me. And that mile loop I can do in less than 15 minutes. And what it tells me is this: when I do that, I come back to my office, my physical body has changed because I've worked some of that stress out, that adrenaline in my system. I've started to work out. I don't do it often enough at all. But that last week of vacation, I came back in a complete different mindset than I went. Completely different. When we take time to slow our bodies down, it will help us address the stress. But the difference to me is this is not a humanistic response. This is not me just saying this as this is the best practice. When I slow my body down, one of the things I consciously do is I pray. I just take a moment to pray. Sometimes those prayers are very simple. And sometimes they're just really me walking that mile loop. And the whole time, people think I'm crazy. I know they do. They have yet to call the police on me. They think I'm crazy because my mouth's moving because I'm telling God, what am I going to do about this? Why are you doing this way? What's going to happen next? What are we going to do about this? This is really frustrating. And I'm talking to God during that whole mile. And at the first time, the first quarter mile, I'll guarantee you I'm talking 100 miles an hour and I'm not listening. But generally by the end of that mile loop or 2 mile loop or tour around the parking lot, by the end of that, what I've done is I've slowed down and I'm starting to listen to. I wish I could tell you that every time I slow my body down and I get to the point that I'm listening, that God miraculously gives me the answer and it's all solved. It doesn't work that way. But what does happen is I am reminded of the words of Jesus. Over and over and over. I've told you these things so that you may have peace. In this world you will have troubles, but take heart. I have overcome the world. Think about what Jesus is saying. Number one, guess what? you and I will all have trouble in this world. Number two, peace comes not because I can avoid trouble. Peace comes because God is already present and He has overcome this world. Listen to the power of that revelation. Now, when I get in those stressful situations and they remain, my peace does not come because Jesus resolves everything. My peace comes because I trust that He has already overcome the world. Now I'm in a place where I can listen. God, what do you want from me? What part do I play in this tension that I'm living in? And what do I need to do to change? That's what we talked about last week. What am I playing? What role do I play in the tension that I'm in? Sometimes I have a role in that tension. I've created the situation. Lee, you've taken on too many responsibilities. You need to change. Lee, you've put yourself into a situation that's not yours to fix. You need to change. Sometimes it's not my situation at all. Lee, somebody else made a poor decision, and there's nothing you can do about it. That doesn't mean I'm not God. And it doesn't change that I'm here with you. But somebody else made a poor decision. Those who are abused can understand, and if they can, they can come out from the other side of abuse by understanding that it's not my fault. This person did this. They're the broken ones, not me. You and I can do these same things in our own lives. The third thing is, in order to focus on those kinds of things, I have to be intentional as well as, at times, reactionary. For Esther, the prayer in her head was reactionary, and it was probably something, God help me. For me, in the times when I'm the most stressed and I need to get out and take a walk for a mile loop, sometimes the prayer in my head has to be slow and deliberate and one that is filled with listening. Remember, we're talking about discipleship. And part of discipleship is learning the tools of being a disciple. And disciples are people who follow in the pattern and the footsteps of Jesus. There could be no more stressful moment than to know that an angry mob was coming to take you, to hang you onto a cross to die. And in the midst of that stressful moment, here's what Jesus did. He called his closest friends with him to pray. And then he himself, in the midst of all of his stress, sat down with his God, his Father in heaven. And he simply said, God, if possible, let this stress pass from me. But if not, I trust you. Because you have overcome the world. Each week, I want to just share things that I do. You have already started to share some of the things you do. I have this blog that I'm connected to. They're all contemplative photographers. They all are Christian photographers. And what they do is every week we get a prompt. Last week, prompt was surprises. And what I did was I put on my blog post just the surprise of a sunrise and peace and what happened to me on vacation. This week, we're supposed to blog about sacred spaces. I'm excited about this one because I have little places that I think are sacred spaces. The Nelson is a sacred space to me. It is a space that I go, it feels worshipful, and it's a place I love to be. And that's one of those places that I get to go and feel like I'm in a sacred space. So this week, I'm going to have to go there so that I can write about it. I have little ways that I can interrupt the stress of my life and find a place that is filled with the peace and the presence of God. Where is yours? Where is yours? This week, what I gave you is another simple tool for us to reflect on our time with God. And the goal here is not for it to be homework. The goal is just for this to be a reminder. A reminder for us as we walk through the week that we can reach out to God in moments of stress and receive peace. Doesn't fix everything, but we can receive peace. This week, I encourage you, hear these words one more time, and may ring in our heads in the midst of our stress. I've told you these things so that you will have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world.